From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The Silicon Valley catchphrases say it all. We've heard move fast and break things, fail forward, and perpetual beta, just to name a couple of them. The idea is that nothing's perfect, but you make big advances through an endless chain of experiments, mistakes, and then improvements. Sounds good, right? But Reshma Sojani says the fundamental character trait required to flourish in failure is bravery, and that bravery isn't something society or parents like to grow in girls. Sojani is CEO and founder of Girls Who Code, a national nonprofit organization that's trying to close the gender gap in tech. But Sojani says the bravery deficit isn't just in tech, that girls everywhere are taught to shun risk and play it safe, and she wants to change that. This hour on Point, learning to be brave, not perfect. And you can join us. Do you think girls are taught to play it safe, to aim for perfectionism and not risk-taking or bravery? Or do you disagree? Is parenting the problem? Or perhaps a society in which women aren't as easily forgiven for when they do fail? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, Reshma Sojani joins us today from New York. She is founder and CEO of Girls Who Code. It's a nonprofit that says it's building the largest pipeline of future female engineers in the United States. And Sojani's new book is called Brave, Not Perfect. Fear less, fail more, and live bolder. We have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Reshma, welcome to the program.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Okay, so first of all, I would actually just like to hear from you your own personal experience, your own story about finding liberation through failure here, because you know, because as I said at the very, very beginning of the show, at the top of the hour, your career, your life seems to be one that's marked by success. So what is it about failure that you found so liberating in your life?
I was definitely a perfectionist. You know, I was that good immigrant daughter. My parents came here as refugees, so I already feel like I had to sacrifice for them, do everything right, go to the right schools, you know, get an A+, you know, do everything that was going to make their sacrifice worth it. And I also thought in my head, like, if I went to the right schools, if I worked at the right places, if I did really well, I would be happy. Mm-hmm. And I woke up at age 33, working as a lawyer in finance, and literally coming home every day in the fetal position. I hated my job. I felt like the world was passing me by. I wasn't serving the people, which is what I wanted to do, and I was miserable. And I had seen Hillary Clinton give her first concession speech, and she had this line where she said, you know, just because I failed doesn't mean you shouldn't try to. Uh-huh. And there was something about those words, like having the permission to try something, because I think so many times we don't even bother to try if we don't think it's going to work out, ignited something in me. And I decided to run for Congress, and I lost miserably, but I was free.
You were so, but how were you free?
Because I realized that failure didn't break me, and I thought my whole life that if I did something risky, if I did something hard, and it didn't work out, that my whole world would come crashing down. And even though I lost this race, I was broke, humiliated. I had pissed off everybody in the Democratic establishment. I felt happy. Like, I felt joyful. I had happiness because I tried. And it started building this bravery muscle in me. And it also made me realize, again, that failure doesn't have to break you. Because I literally felt that I would break. Like, I would fail and die. And I wouldn't be able to get up again. Uh-huh. And that didn't happen. And like, to me, what was the worst thing that could have possibly happened to me, which was losing this very public congressional race.
Yeah. Well, so I want to explore with you in greater detail sort of this bigger societal critique you have about how we raise girls. But if I just may engage for a second as a fellow South Asian daughter of immigrants with you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, a lot of what you say sounds very familiar to me. Because, of course, my parents are immigrants as well, South Asian origin. And I heard a lot about success and particular paths to success and perfectionism growing up. I could tell you all the lectures I'm sure you heard as right. well.
Be, but, right. You can be doctor, lawyer, or, right, an engineer.
Engineer, yep. Which, by the way, I got degrees in engineering. So, but what I wanted to say is I feel like, at least in these specific cases, when we talk about failure, I think of what the failures that my family feared were. And the failure that they feared was not being successful so that you might live a life of privation, which is what they had tried to escape in becoming immigrants to America. So it's kind of like a relative risk question is really what I'm asking you. Isn't that part of the picture here in terms of the specifics around what your parents had raised you to believe was the path to success?
I mean, it's interesting. I think that they had a very specific idea that if you did these things, we would be happy and you would be happy, right?
Yeah.
So, Reshma, if you became a lawyer and you had a very stable job and then you got married and you had kids and you didn't, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to be, quote, happy. And I think what we see with a lot of people in the South Asian community and other immigrant communities is that so many of us hide our dreams, right? We let our good ideas die on the vine because of what we think we're supposed to do for our family. And so even Meghna, when I decided to run for office, I remember sitting there and at my office and like calling my dad. And I was shaking to tell him that I was going to quit this good paying job to go run for politics. And I thought that he was going to yell at me. And he was like, thank God. Like, of course you should run. Like, and it was so crazy. I'm like, why didn't I ask you earlier? But I think he saw how unhappy I was.
Yeah.
And that maybe he was wrong about, quote, what was going to make me happy. And I do think that we think that being perfect, once everything is, quote, perfect, we will be happy. Mm. And so many of us realize that that is just simply not true. And then we're confused, right, as to why that outcome that we had been promised is not leading to joy.
Right. So let's broaden then our perspective here, because I could talk with you for an hour about the specifics around being the daughter of South Asian immigrants. But you write about in your book how you think that for girls as a whole, we being society, parents, are raising them to value this perfection over risk-taking. Make the case.
Yeah. So, I mean, sit at the playground and you'll see, right, girls are told to kind of smile pretty, you know, play it safe. Like, don't crawl to the top of the monkey bars. You know, don't get your dress too dirty. Straighten your bow. And you watch boys just kind of climb high and just jump. And you know, from about 30 months old, it's like we start protecting our daughters. We start coddling them from pain and then from risk and failure. But for our men, for our young boys, we're like trying to teach them how to man up. You know, I think about I have a 4.5-year-old son and I think a 4-year-old son. And I think about his swim class, right? And in Sean's swim class, it's like half boys and half girls. And when the girls are learning how to swim, all the parents, the moms and the dads are like, it's okay, honey. You don't have to get your face wet. It's a swimming class, right? Mm-hmm. And with the boys, they're just pushing them in to the deep end because they're trying to teach them how to be men, how to be risk takers. And this behavior then leads to, for girls, a lot of just fear of failure, right? Fear of rejection, fear of getting things wrong. And so mothers, when, you know, their daughter's not doing a perfect cartwheel in gymnastics class because she doesn't want her to, quote, feel bad, she pulls her out and puts her into soccer.
Mm. I mean, but the pushback would be some parents would just push their daughters or sons even harder. But let me flip the script, though, on you here for a second, because couldn't we also see this, though, as the problem is not so much not pushing girls to be more brave, but that we are pushing boys too hard to value sort of risk-taking above all, that maybe we should actually be treating them with greater compassion in the way that we treat young girls?
1,000%. I couldn't agree more. And it's funny, you know, I never thought I was going to have a son. I always thought I would have a daughter. And so, you know, having a boy and raising a son has been really eye-opening for me and my household. Like, you know, my husband and I got in a fight about a nightlight a year ago, right? Sean started waking up being like, I'm afraid of the dark. I'm afraid of the dark. And so, you know, I went to Bye Bye Baby, bought him the nightlight, and I would take him upstairs, plug in the nightlight, go in my room, and then I would hear Nahal kind of come up, right, a few moments later and turn off the light. And then Sean would scream, and we would do this thing. And I was like, Nahal, what is your problem, right? Why do you keep turning off the nightlight? And he's like, because I want to teach him how to be strong, you know, how to be tough. And I said, if Sean was a girl, would you let him have the nightlight? And he caught himself and he was like, yeah, I would. You know, and it's a profound kind of moment for us, right? Because we do. It's like these little things. And we should let our boys have the nightlight. You know, we should let our boys, you know, like be as soft and as, you know, all the in the ways that we think that we raise our daughters, right?
Yeah.
And we need to think about gender a lot more in the way that we're raising them.
So to bring it back to girls, though, I mean, how is it that you're seeing, as you write in the book, how do you see these gendered parenting styles then playing in the lives of these young girls as they grow up and the choices they're making?
You see, like I said, you see it in the book at 30 months where girls kind of build these, like, even when they're building blocks, girls will build really low, stable structures, right? Boys will just build high. And so everything about them becomes about kind of people pleasing, you know, stability, right? Dampening their voices. And, you know, they say about around 8 years old is when, you know, all that, like, that voice shows up in your head that starts telling you that you're not good enough and that you're not, you know, strong enough. And you start thinking about what other people think about you. So that starts appearing for girls at around 8. And from that moment on, they're less thinking about what they want and they're thinking more about what other people want. And all of that kind of toxic people pleasing, you know, perfectionism leads girls to, like, you know, start becoming addicted to perfectionism. And when something doesn't come naturally to them, they start giving up before they even try.
Interesting. Well, Reshma Sojani, hold on here for just a second. We have to take a quick break. Reshma Sojani is founder and CEO of Girls Who Code, and she's written a new book. It's called Brave, Not Perfect. Fear less, fail more, and live bolder. We have an excerpt at onpointradio.org, and we want to hear from you. Is what Reshma's saying about how she sees how we raise girls, is that ringing a bell for you? Does that sound familiar? Do you think we are raising girls in America to value perfectionism over bravery or risk-taking? What effect is that having as those girls grow up? We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Reshma Sojani. She's founder and CEO of Girls Who Code. It's a nonprofit that has some 90,000 members in 50 states and says it's building the largest pipeline of future female engineers in the United States. And Reshma Sojani is out with a new book. It's called Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. And in it, she talks about her desire to raise girls in America to put aside perfection and embrace more risk-taking, more bravery. And we wonder what you think about that. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. So, Reshma, just bear with me for a moment here, because I want to play a couple of bits of sound, which you'll be familiar with. It's about lemonade, not the Beyoncé album, but Lemonade, the actual drink here, because there's an episode of the British TV series The Secret Life of 4 and 5-year-olds. And in this episode, they perform this test of basically an empathy test, and they perform it on boys and then they perform it on girls. And in the scene, you see a woman offering the children glasses of lemonade, and she asks them how to tell her if it's tasty or not. But they put salt in the lemonade, so it doesn't taste so good. And first of all, you're going to hear how the boys responded.
Oh, no. That is disgusting.
What, you don't like it?
No.
What do you mean?
It's too sweet.
It's too sweet and I'm going to be sick tonight.
Are you sure? Are you sure you don't want any more?
Makes me sick. I just don't want to drink it.
So little boys there are saying that the lemonade's going to make them sick. Here's how the girls responded.
It was a teeny bit too much lemon. I love the lemon inside it.
I think it's incredible, but I don't like the lemon in it.
I loved it. I loved it.
Okay? I loved it.
I loved it, but I didn't like the lemon.
I pretended I did like it, so it made her happy.
Well, Reshma Sojani, what do you hear in those two sets of responses?
It's so interesting, right? So the boys just tell you what they think, right? They don't really care whether it's going to hurt her feelings that her lemonade is salty. But the girls, it's like they immediately do a calculation. Do I want to tell you the truth or do I want to tell you what you hear? And which answer is going to make you like me more? So you really see how this, quote, toxic people-pleasing starts to get born. And it doesn't just end with 4 and 5-year-olds, right? I mean, you see, as women, I mean, I could probably think of how that's played out for me, you know, last week when I was getting a cup of coffee and someone pushed me by accident and I said sorry, right? We are that behavior that we're taught to put other people's feelings first really plays out and then stays with us as women.
Okay. So let me just tease this apart here, though, because you're talking about responses that reflect a young girl's desire to measure what should I say that would make people like me more versus putting other people first. And I would say that the latter is, you know, putting other people first is a form of empathy, again, that maybe we ought to be encouraging across the board even more.
But at what cost? And that's where I think perfectionism comes in.
Okay.
You're absolutely right. And I talk a lot about empathy in terms of the products that I see my girls build and how wonderful and that we need more of it. But oftentimes that may get in the way of what's good for us, what's healthy for us. And that's perfectionism, right?
Yeah.
That's about doing things perfectly right and making you feel good. Right. And how that kind of rears its ugly head and the consequences of that.
I see. OK. And so then how is this playing out in the workplace? Because, of course, you know, part of what your career is you're trying to sort of change the gender dynamics in tech in particular. But, you know, as these young girls grow up, why do you think this sort of bravery deficit matters as they get older?
And this book is about that, right?
Yeah.
It's really about strategies, not just for parents, but for women, right? So I think the way perfectionism is playing out in two ways. One, it's making people unhappy and it's creating a leadership gap, right? So on the first part, women are twice as likely to be depressed than men. And so you see when women are approached with opportunities, if they think it's too hard or risky or it might not work out, they back out of them. They let their good ideas die on the vine. And then they see other people pursue them and have success, and it leaves us with regret and envy. And that regret and envy literally eats us up inside, and it causes anxiety, depression, right? Dissatisfaction with our lives and our own happiness. And you're really seeing, I think, that play out right now in society. And the second thing is perfectionism makes us feel like we gotta be perfect to lead. And the consequences of that is, even though we say it's the year of the woman, we still only have 25% women in Congress. We have fewer Fortune 500 female CEOs than we've ever had, right? Not much has changed. And I love Carol Dweck has this awesome quote where she says, you know, if life were one long grade school, like women would rule the world, but it's not. And what matters in the workforce, what matters in Silicon Valley, what matters in Congress is bravery. Not perfection.
You know, I wonder if part of this is also that I don't know if there's any study to back this up. So I will fully admit this is just my personal observation that, you know, not only are women maybe as young girls, they're raised to perhaps aim for perfection over risk taking, but that as adults, it seems to me that when I've seen women take risks and fail, the consequences of that failure for the woman are much higher than a similar failure I might see in a male colleague. Do you see what I'm saying?
That's
like,
right.
Like the workplace pushes back and says, well, you know what? You messed up. So we're not going to actually support your failure as a learning process, but we're going to punish you.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling for a bravery revolution. It can't be these one-off events where you see bravery. Because here's the thing. Like a lot of times, like when I ran for Congress, it's not going to work out. It's not about the outcome. It's about taking risks so you have more joy and you don't have regrets. So if you see women doing that on a large scale, right? If you see women applying for jobs like men when they meet 60% of the qualifications and not 100, I think we would be less harsh when it doesn't work out. And again, because it's so unusual, there's a higher cost for women to pay.
Mm. But are we already seeing places, sectors in which a change is on the horizon? Because wasn't it, back in 2017 that for the first time ever, we had more women than men enrolling in medical school, for example?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I think you do that. I think you see it in you know, there's gender parity in the legal profession and in law schools and med schools and entry level positions. But there's not much has changed when you go down the funnel.
Right.
Like the leadership ranks are still very white and very male. I mean, you saw that photo being released, I think, of, you know, was it Paul Weiss, right? Where their entire partnership class was pretty much all white and mostly male. And so I don't know. Like, things are changing, but they could be a lot better. And I think that they will be better when we have everyday bravery, when we start using our voice, when we get out of that toxic relationship, when we walk away from that job that we feel like, it's okay, but it's not really what I want to do. It's not just the bravery that you see happening on the big stage. It's bravery everywhere.
Yeah. Well,
that's what we need to inspire.
You know, I want to turn to our callers here for just a moment because you seem to have hit a nerve, Reshma. We're speaking this hour with Reshma Sojani. Her new book is Brave Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. And let's go to Moira, who's calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Moira, you're on the air.
Hi. I was listening to this conversation and it was just one great big yes for me. I have two small boys. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And my 4-year-old, he loves to play with, I would say, you know, very strong young girls. But something that does happen, and I've seen it happen more than once, is mothers will apologize for their daughters when the daughters speak in a quote-unquote bossy way to my son. And I'll say, no, I like the joke, you know, that's just great management material. And also, you know, I also will say, oh, no, you know, my son has to learn how to speak to people who speak to him like that. And I just think it's really interesting that mothers literally will apologize for their daughters for speaking strongly to my son.
And all the time.
That at 4 years old, that will teach you how to behave towards others all their lives.
Mm. Well, Moira, thank you for your call. Reshma, what do you think?
It's so true. And it's not just in Nebraska. I see that in New York all the time. And again, I think it's because we're worried that our daughters, if they're strong, if they use their voice, you know, if they're bold and brash, they won't be liked. Or that's not how little girls are supposed to be. And I think, again, a lot of, you know, a lot of well-meaning feminists, we catch ourselves in that behavior. And so, and that's where I think it really has to begin, is watching the way and how we are letting our daughters be and allowing them to be free to be however their personalities are.
Well, let's go to Anna, who's calling from Miami, Florida. Anna, you're on the air.
Hi, Reshma and Meghna. I'm so happy to be talking to you both. So I've actually been speaker in Girls Code Miami, and I also have a local show about tech startup entrepreneurship and social media called Analytical Beat in Miami. And I went through a terrible experience about 6 months ago. I was hired by a tech conference to work on innovation and promotion for the tech conference. And in one of the events that I went to speak in public about this, there was also a talk about how to raise funds for startups. One of the speakers said something incorrectly about digital marketing. And I ended up speaking in the Q&A session and, you know, letting him know that that was incorrect. He was talking about viral marketing in any case. Somehow that someone in the audience, someone who claimed to be a mentor for tech entrepreneurs and startups, ended up contacting the tech conference I was working for and telling them to basically put me in my place. And eventually that scenario ended up in the ultimate dismissal of my person in that role. And basically what I want to say is I've been bold, and the bolder I get, the more I see men pop in left and right, trying to shoot me down. And I don't think that it would happen to a man. I don't think if a man would have been in that Q&A session and would have spoken out to something that he thought was incorrect for a speaker to say because of his experience, he would have had some guy in the audience go and reach out to the company and
sort of have
the company totally dismiss that.
Well, Anna, thank you for your call and for sharing your story with us. And so Reshma, let me turn back to you, because once again, there's this question of, okay, so how do we change this dynamic if women who are daring to be brave even now at times feel like they're being slapped back?
Anna, as you were talking, the words I kept thinking about is, yet she persisted, right? It was that same thing you saw kind of play out with Elizabeth Warren. It's uncomfortable for us when we see women be strong and use their voice and stand up and speak out and tell you what they think. And men don't like it. And sometimes women don't like it either, let's be honest. And that's why this behavior just can't become it's got to become the norm. You have to see more women using their voice and raising their hand and saying something when they see that something is wrong. And so I applaud you for your bravery. I think that there are probably so many women in that audience that day that in their minds and in their hearts were like, you go, girl. You know, and you probably inspired them to do the same at another conference or another event or at their dinner table or in their workplace. So again, we have to keep encouraging women to be brave. And I think when that happens and you see that, you will see this sea change, and he will no longer be able to have called you out like that and had any repercussions for it, because it will be how all women are speaking up.
Yeah. So, Reshma, let me just ask you, how is being brave different than leaning in, if I can borrow Sheryl Sandberg's phrase?
I think it's so different. Look, Sheryl's a huge supporter of Girls Who Code. And of mine. But I think that Lean In got it wrong in many ways. And I think that it sent the message that that was about us. And we just had to do more and try harder. And I don't think that that's the problem. I think women have been leaning in and things aren't changing. And also, I think it was a lot, that book was focused a lot about the workplace. And I think what I'm talking about in Brave Not Perfect is not just about being brave so you can get that promotion. It's about being brave so you can live a more joyful life, that you can live a life without regret, that you can feel like, you know, your deepest dreams are not this thing that you're hiding on the side, but that you're actually able to articulate on them or move on them regardless of the outcome.
Yeah, that's so powerful. I mean, I'm really glad you said that, because I'm just thinking of, you know, myself as a parent and suddenly checking myself, like I should be telling, you know, my offsprings more often that, you know, like, hey, you tried that and it didn't work. That's okay. You know, like, good job. Good job for trying. Even just, I think, like, basic small messages can go a long way.
Yeah, totally. And I think we don't, you know, I think with girls, one of my favorite anecdotes in the book was a computer science teacher, and they were working on network cables. And he would say, you know, when the boys got it wrong, I literally would take out my scissors and cut it and be like, nope, do it again. But with girls, I couldn't do that. I couldn't take out the scissors. I had to tell them, well, you got this good job on this piece, right? Now, maybe you want to try that again. It's all these qualifiers that we use to like not to inoculate them. And it doesn't build resiliency. And we have to build resiliency. And we have to tell girls in our offsprings, you know, you may just be mediocre and that's okay.
Yeah. But okay, so
you don't have to get an A+ all the time.
But speculate with me for a second here, though. I mean, we're actually going to hear from a teacher when we come back from the break. But what if, you know, what if he had just gotten out the scissors with the girls and cut the wire and said, done it again? I mean, does that teacher not rightfully worry about the risk of turning the little girl off to the learning moment, the project, with a sort of more forceful or upfront approach?
Yes, but we got to get to a place where he does take out the scissors with the girls and we're not treating our boys and girls differently. But in that, there needs, like I said, I think there needs to be a wholesale discussion about unlearning perfectionism and learning bravery in schools right now. So we're moving up to that place. So that's why I love coding, right? Coding, because it's so annoying and frustrating and that semicolon's in the wrong place, you got to do it all over again. You are literally learning failure and bravery. And you walk away from that experience, you can be like, all right, maybe it took me 10 times, but I made a box. You know, I built a website. I made the sprite dance, right? Yeah. I did it. And you take that feeling, because girls remember when they thought they couldn't,
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're going to talk to a teacher when we come back to get sort of a school-level view on these lessons in bravery. So, Reshma Sojani, stand by here for a second. The new book is Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. And we want to hear from you. What is your response to Reshma's call to encourage more bravery, more risk-taking in young girls? We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Reshma Sojani. She is founder and CEO of Girls Who Code, and her new book is Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. And Reshma, let me just give you a quick little merry-go-round of a lot of the responses we're getting online to your call for more bravery in girls. Glenn C. Koning on Twitter says, but what can we learn from the girls? Is it possible that we're pushing risk-taking among boys too hard? Catherine Henny Lewandowski on Facebook says, my daughter, the oldest, played softball, was tough and strong and still is today. But my youngest, a boy, was treated like a baby. Now he's the perfectionist who frequently gives up before trying. Not all boys are pushed and not all girls are shielded. Sometimes birth order and other factors affect strength in a child. And one more here I just want to read. Gerald F. Nord on our website says, I think women can't afford to fail as often as men because so many doubt their basic competence. There will be those who will take it as judgment on her and not really deserving another chance because she has not, she has shown her natural unsuitability. So perhaps they're a call that Gerald is saying that it's just more risky for women to fail publicly. But Reshma, stand by here for just a second, because I promised that we were going to get sort of a level from inside a school, a view here. So let's go turn now to Vanessa Rodriguez. She's joining us from Bernie, Texas. She teaches computing and engineering at Champion High School, and before that she taught computer science at Lowell Middle School in San Antonio. Vanessa Rodriguez, welcome to On Point.
Hello.
So thank you so much for joining, Vanessa. And just give us your view here from inside the classroom. Do you see kind of a turning point in your female students' willingness to take risk as they get older?
Well, it's my concern is more of the lack of females that I have in the classroom.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I was, just going over my numbers. I teach about 100 students, and of that, I have 12 females. In STEM, and then in computer science, we have about 8 females in there. And so there seems to be a disconnect in, I wouldn't say maybe because of social or cultural influences, but in education itself on how to implement it, maybe early on in elementary, to have an even playing field of, instruction on how to approach STEM, computer science, because once I feel like once puberty hits, the girls tend to want to be a part of their social connection, their social group, and tend to want to do what the girls, guide them to do, which is, and I'm not being in any way judging. I have a daughter myself, but they want to be in other activities besides engineering. It's not cool to be an engineer.
Uh-huh.
So, and we see that. And so the girls that I do have in the classroom, I feel like they are the brave. They take criticism alongside their male peers.
Yeah, and so, Vanessa, if I can just jump in here, it seems like the numbers that you're quoting from your own experience are somewhat reflective of, you know, what we're seeing in computer science overall in terms of the gender gap. But Reshma, so what is happening? What could be we changing in younger grades? I mean, Vanessa is a high school teacher right now, and she's saying that for STEM education, it's already maybe too late.
Well, I think the thing, I'd love to even ask us, well, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, you see with girls at a younger age, you know, less, in some ways, kind of the perfectionism is really strong by the time you're getting to the point where Vanessa's girls are at. And I think if you think about, and I talk about this in the book, right, that many times girls have like a fixed mindset instead of a growth mindset. So they think they're either good at something or bad at something. And the thing about math and science and computer science, for everybody, boys and girls, it doesn't often come easily. It's frustrating, you know, as a subject matter. And so since boys are taught from a young age to sit with their frustration and challenge, to take those risks, that they don't have to be, you know, aren't patted on the back when they get everything right from the beginning, they can basically start getting the hang of it and stick with it long enough to figure out whether they're good at it or bad at it. Whereas I think girls give up on math and science much easier when it doesn't come easily. I want to tell you a quick story. I had a young woman in my office a few months ago, Isabel, and her mother had won me in an auction. So we were having breakfast and she was saying, you know, mommy, I'm not good at math. And her mom was saying, well, Isabel, what are you talking about? You got an A in math. And she said, well, mom, you know, the other day during math, the teacher asked me in front of the whole class what the answer was. And she hadn't given me enough time to figure it out.
Uh-huh.
So instead of disappointing her and telling her that I didn't know yet, I said I had to go to the bathroom.
Wow.
And it was so, you know what I'm saying? Like that represented so much of, I think, what's going on in girls' minds.
Yeah.
So I think we have to start breaking down, again, this idea of like learning imperfection, learning failure, learning things that are going to allow them to teach that, like coding, so they start practicing that behavior and get more comfortable with challenge and risk.
Well, Vanessa, what do you think about that?
Well, I can agree. But being in the classroom, this is my third year as a teacher. Coming from the workforce, I decided I wanted to make a difference in the classroom. And I had a short story on, I had a male student just recently come and, you know, come up to me and say, you do realize you're a minority. And I said, which part? The fact that I'm Hispanic or that I'm female? So, because there's not a lot of female teachers in STEM or in computer science. But I just truly feel like students need to be taught earlier on before I get them, as you mentioned, in elementary, and I just find in, now this is my, you know, second school district that I work for, is they do not know how to implement this type of curriculum, the STEM and or computer science. You know, it's a class period, you know, once a week in elementary, at least where I'm at. It really should be integrated into the classroom so that it becomes the norm, not just for male and, you know, it's for females as well.
Yeah.
So that they can have a better understanding with math and science. And so unfortunately, currently, I only see it once a week in elementary.
Yeah. No, I don't think our elected officials get it. How fast things are changing, how much automation is taking shape, how much we need to push for all of our kids to learn coding as young as possible. You know, Girls Who Code, we're going to have 6,000 Girls Who Code clubs. We start as young as third grade, and it's remarkable, you know, what we're able to do in teaching that young, having environments where girls feel like they can fail, and that by the time they get to you, they are excited about it, but it's really going to take a wholesale change to basically see the type of parity that we want to see in 6 or 12.
Yeah. Well, Vanessa Rodriguez teaches computing and engineering at Champion High School, speaking to us from Boerne, Texas. Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us today giving us the view from inside the classroom there. I really appreciate it, Vanessa. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I want to play a little bit of tape here of a parent making space for his daughter to rightfully feel confidence. This happened in 1995 in an interview on ABC News with a then 14-year-old tennis phenom who happened to have the name, or not happened to have the name, her name is Venus Williams, okay? And so this ABC correspondent asks Venus if he thinks she can beat an opponent. And Venus Williams is like, well, yes, of course. But the correspondent keeps grilling her about her confidence until Venus Williams' father interrupts and tells the reporter to stop trying to undermine his daughter.
You think you can beat him?
I know I can beat him.
You know him. Very confident.
I'm very confident.
You say it so easily. Why?
Because I believe
him. What she has said, she said it with so much confidence the first time. But if you keep going on and on, listen, we can't keep interrupting. I mean, if you want,
you've got to understand that you're dealing with an image of a 14-year-old child. And this child going to be out there playing with you, old and me going to be in the grave. When she says something, we done told you what's happened. You're dealing with a little black kid. And let her be a kid. She'll answer it with a lot of confidence. Leave that alone.
So a little tough to hear there, but you hear Venus Williams' father saying, you're dealing with a little black kid, and let her be a kid. She answered with a lot of confidence. Leave that alone. Let's go back to the phones here. Let's go to Kirsten, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Kirsten, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for the discussion as a whole and for letting me be a part of it. I really just, first of all, great to hear that clip of Venus Williams and her father. I grew up in a household with two older brothers and a dad, and I grew up being thrown into the deep end. So I sort of kind of was this fearless young girl. I ended up wrestling on the boys' team when I was in middle school, and throughout my schooling and higher education and career, I've noticed a lot of pushback because of being brave. And sort of, for me, the more mud I get on my face, the more I'm like, oh, great, another chance to learn something new when I do fail. So I think, in general, the whole discussion is part of this broader, what is gender and how do we define gender roles? And I think that's awesome. And I just didn't know if you had a perspective on, for those women who did grow up with these strong male voices and how much of a large role that plays in their development and how different that is. Even now, my husband is such an advocate for me. I have some friends who will be like, oh, can you not be so Kirsten today? And my husband is just always saying, no, this is why I love you. This is awesome and wonderful, and how important it is to have men be advocates for this same sort of bravery and ability and support when I do fail.
Well, you know, Kirsten,
when I do fail, those people are there for me.
Yeah, Kirsten, thank you so much for your call. And Reshma, your response to her?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a powerful question. I did a ton of focus groups when I was writing this book to really, and there were, you know, there were women like you, right, that were raised by strong men, sometimes strong moms, who were just incredibly brave and like pushed imperfection. I saw that also really pop up with athletes, you know, women who had basically been playing competitive sports for most of their life. And so they weren't really wound up by perfection, and they were brave. And so that I learned a lot from them, and really thinking about, you know, what are the tactics for basically learning bravery? What are the strategies that you could learn? And you know, one of those, for example, is, you know, practicing imperfection. You know, if you grew up in a household where if you failed or took risks or you didn't feel penalized for it, then in many ways you were practicing imperfection as you were being, you know, as you were growing up.
Well, let's go to Jay, who's calling from Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Jay, you're on the air.
Hi. Just wanted to describe quickly an experience that I had. I was a professor of mechanical engineering, and actually, as part of my job, I was leader of this course. It's called Introduction to Engineering. You're probably very familiar with those courses.
Mm-hmm.
And something that always confused me was this class did, teams did design projects. And design projects, these are freshmen. Design projects for freshman students are always involve lots of argument and ideas, and very often the person that is the most persistent about their idea is the person that wins.
And Jay, just let me jump in here. I'm just wondering, are you headed towards saying that like the most persistent people were often the men in the group? What did you see with your female students?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there would be times when we would introduce the subject of the design or the problem, and there would be males who would immediately say, oh, I know how to solve that.
Right.
And you know, very often we would say, well, we don't even know the problem yet.
Yeah.
So we're not quite sure how to solve it. But the other thing that was really striking, though, is that I would see these female students who would have fantastic ideas, but those ideas would be neglected.
Mm. Well, Jay, you know what? I'm going to have to jump in here and forgive me for doing this, but I'm going to be brave and bold and say we're really running down on time, Jay. But thank you so much for your call. And Reshma, I mean, here's a former professor of mechanical engineering. You know, I think he's saying a lot that he's seen in his classrooms and his lectures exactly what you're talking about here.
Yeah, but, and I think you see it in classrooms across the country, regardless of the subject, right?
Yeah. But what I really want to do, we've just got 2.5 minutes left here. A couple of minutes ago, you mentioned growth mindset, right? This is something that we could spend another several hours talking about because a lot of educators are thinking about it right now. But you, in the end of your book, you talk about how to build a bravery mindset.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to impart folks with some useful pieces of knowledge over the course of the hour.
That's my favorite part.
So how do you build a bravery mindset?
Okay. I'm giving all of our listeners three strategies. Here's three things I want you to do. The first thing is, I want you to practice imperfection. So for some people that might be, hey, send an email that's slightly consequential with a typo in it. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners are like, oh, what?
That was my response.
Because we spend so much time reading and rereading emails when we should be doing other things. So start, and when you send that email with a typo on it, you're going to realize that nothing's going to happen. It's going to be just fine. So practice imperfection. Second thing is, do something you suck at. So that's not for the purpose of getting better at it, but for knowing what it feels like to just be mediocre. So for me, it's surfing. Can't swim, don't like water. Now that's a whole South Asian conversation. But I get on the surfboard, and I normally never really get on it. And I'm literally crying as I'm dragging this board out on the beach in this cold, cold water. But I love it because I know what it feels like to do something I suck at. And I don't stop myself from doing it because I actually like it even though I'm not good at it. And the third thing I want you to do is just start. You know, so many of us have ideas or things that we want to do, but we just don't do it. You know, we talk ourselves out of it. So just take one step. So if you're looking at an apartment that needs to be cleaned or a closet that is a hot mess, just clean one shelf. If you have an idea, just buy one URL, right? If you have something you really want to do, tell one person about it. Just take one step. Just start. So those are my three strategies.
Okay. Well, for the record, I really love swimming, but I am terrified of sending the imperfect email. So how's that? Reshma Sojourney, she is founder and CEO of Girls Who Code. Her new book is called Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. We've got a link to an excerpt of the book. And by the way, Reshma also did a very popular TED Talk about this. Both those links are at onpointradio.org. Reshma, it's been really great to talk with you. Thank you so very much. Well, On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amato, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, and Alex Schroeder. We've had help from Matt Hoisch, Asil Kibbe, David Marino, and Alex Pena. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.